Today is Friday, January 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. A day after rioters stormed the U.S. Capitol, disrupting the certification of election results that would go on to confirm Joe Biden as the 46th president of the United States, what happened?
Take that house! Take it now!
What are leaders saying from around the world?
American democracy has always inspired me.
We'll have complete coverage and more next.
Take that house! Take it now! Take it now!
That was the sound of the riot in Washington Wednesday when thousands stormed Capitol Hill. The assault by supporters of President Donald Trump forced members of Congress to evacuate the chambers for several hours, interrupting their work certifying President-elect Joe Biden's victory. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti returned to the Capitol on Thursday.
It was surprisingly calm. There were, I would say, dozens of police officers, probably hundreds of police officers around the Capitol, both on the grounds and on the streets. They were various police officers, National Guard out in full force, DC police officers, state police, both from Maryland and Virginia. They even had their vehicles lined up on the street around the Capitol. So the police are in force. People are curious. They're walking around the Capitol, but very calm. It's very quiet. It would be like a regular day if not for the police presence.
Carolyn, what can you tell us about security at the Capitol? Because there has been a lot of criticism leveled at law enforcement for not securing the building. And in fact, senators have also called for the sergeant at arms to resign or be fired when the new administration begins. So what can you tell us about the security moving forward?
Absolutely, Steve. You're right. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the security. Capitol Police saying that they were prepared. Others saying they were terribly outnumbered and they did not have those fence barriers in place that they typically have when they are expecting this size of crowd. Now, also, you have to keep in mind that this protest wasn't slated to be at the Capitol per se, so that could have been part of the problem. It was only after the president spoke that then the protest moved to the Capitol and that they breached the perimeter. And they actually went in areas that I have never been in, and I have a Capitol Hill credential. So you saw them scaling the walls of the Capitol, breaking through the windows inside the members' offices, sitting in their chairs, moving their chairs, turning them over, sitting in the chamber, something we have never seen before in this country. But what has taken place to assure this from never happening again is astounding. Because while we were there at the Capitol today, they were erecting 3-meter high fencing all around the Capitol, huge black fences. This is a large perimeter around the Capitol. We're not talking about right next to the building. We're talking about all the way on the grass next to the street.
Carolyn, you had the opportunity to speak to a Trump supporter who was at the Capitol on Wednesday. What can you tell us about their experience?
Right. He was from Branson, Missouri. He said he came in specifically for this rally, for this pro-Trump rally, and he made it all the way up to the balcony of the Capitol. Again, you cannot be on that balcony without a special credential on a normal day. So for anyone from the public who has not gone through a metal detector, who does not have the right credentialing, who does not have a reason to be on that balcony, it's amazing that they got that far.
VOA correspondent Carolyn Pursuti. 4 people lost their lives Wednesday during the riot, including one woman who was shot by Capitol Police. While police arrested only a dozen or so people Wednesday afternoon when the rioters stormed the Capitol, several dozen others have since been arrested, and officials have vowed to pursue the rest. Identifying and arresting them, however, could take weeks. The Justice Department said seditious conspiracy charges, as well as rioting and insurrection, will be considered for those arrested in the breach of the U.S. Capitol. Thursday, Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Wednesday's ultimate blame, quote, lies with the unhinged criminals who broke down doors, trampled our nation's flag, fought with law enforcement, and tried to disrupt our democracy, and with those who incited them. In her weekly address, Democrat Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi blamed President Trump for the events that unfolded Wednesday.
Yesterday, the President of the United States incited an armed insurrection against America. The gleeful desecration of the U.S. Capitol, which is the temple of our American democracy, and the violence targeting Congress are horrors that will forever stain our nation's history, instigated by the President of the United States. That's why it's such a stain. In calling for this seditious act, the President has committed an unspeakable assault on our nation and our people. I join the Senate Democratic leader in calling on the Vice President to remove this President by immediately invoking the 25th Amendment. If the Vice President and Cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
The 25th Amendment, Pelosi refers to, allows for the removal of a president who is no longer fit to carry out his duties. Impeachment requires a trial by Congress for the president to be removed. Later on Thursday, U.S. President Donald Trump released a short video condemning the Capitol breach.
The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engage in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay.
Trump acknowledged a new administration would be sworn in on January 20th and committed to a smooth transition of power. A day after the attack on the U.S. Capitol, President-elect Joe Biden spoke in his hometown of Wilmington, Delaware, where he issued a strong rebuke to those who assembled in Washington and to President Trump.
What we witnessed yesterday was not dissent. It was not disorder. It was not protest. It was chaos. They weren't protesters. Don't dare call them protesters. They were a riotous mob, insurrectionists, domestic terrorists. And I wish we could say we couldn't see it coming. But that isn't true. We could see it coming. The past 4 years, we've had a president who's made his contempt for our democracy, our Constitution, the rule of law clear in everything he has done.
President Trump has contested the results of the November election that he lost to President-elect Biden. In more than 60 lawsuits and in the Supreme Court, judges determined that Trump's allegations of widespread voter fraud were without merit. Brad Raffensperger, the top election official in the state of Georgia, announced on Thursday that the Trump campaign had withdrawn its court challenges, electing not to provide evidence or witnesses under oath before courts in that state. Many world leaders have expressed shock and dismay at the riots in Washington Wednesday, and Henry Ridgewell brings us that story.
European allies watched with dismay as the violence unfolded at the U.S. Capitol Wednesday. French President Emmanuel Macron gave a televised statement.
What happened today in Washington, D.C. is not America. Definitely.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel praised the reaction of President-elect Joe Biden. This democracy is stronger than the attackers and rioters, she said. On Twitter, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson called the violence disgraceful. His Interior Minister Priti Patel blamed President Donald Trump.
His comments directly led to the violence, and so far he's failed to condemn that violence, and that is completely wrong.
NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg tweeted, "Shocking scenes in Washington, D.C. The outcome of this democratic election must be respected." A spokesman for the United Nations Secretary General said it is important that political leaders impress on their followers the need to refrain from violence. Israel's leader Benjamin Netanyahu expressed support for his country's chief ally.
American democracy has always inspired me. Lawlessness and violence are the opposite of the values we know Americans and Israelis cherish.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi wrote on Twitter, "The democratic process cannot be allowed to be subverted through unlawful protests." Meanwhile, US rivals taunted Washington. In a televised speech, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said it showed how fragile and vulnerable Western democracy is. In a statement, Venezuela said the United States is suffering the same thing that it has generated in other countries with its policies of aggression. China attempted to twist the narrative. Hua Chunying, a spokesperson for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, said the mainstream media in the United States have unanimously condemned this as a violent incident, using words like thugs, extremists, villains, and disgrace. However, what words did they use to describe the violent protesters in Hong Kong? They said it was a beautiful sight and profiled violent protesters as democratic heroes and said that the American people stand with them. Moscow's deputy UN ambassador, Dmitry Polyansky, compared the violence to the 2014 revolution in Ukraine, writing on Twitter, "Quite Maidan-style pictures are coming from DC." US allies share the pain of many Americans watching the violence at the heart of its democracy. Many foes are using the events as an opportunity to settle scores. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Jeff Selden is VOA's national security correspondent. He tells me that social media giant Facebook has taken additional action prohibiting President Trump from posting on the platform for at least 2 weeks.
Well, the social media companies have become increasingly alarmed at the rhetoric, the type of verbiage that President Trump has been using both on his social media accounts, whether Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. On Thursday, after pro-Trump supporters, pro-Trump extremists stormed the U.S. Capitol, and some of whom were arrested, others will be arrested, we're being told, and investigations are ongoing, Facebook decided that because of the rhetoric, even though Donald Trump is president of the United States, it is simply not safe because, in Facebook's view, he is trying to undermine the peaceful transfer of power from his administration to the incoming administration of President-elect Joe Biden. And Trump will not be able to post on any of his accounts on either Facebook or Instagram. Twitter initially, to some of the tweets that he put out while the mob was storming the U.S. Capitol and had, you know, battling against U.S. Capitol police, decided to put a 12-hour ban. That time period has elapsed. Twitter now says that it is considering extending the ban. We haven't seen any tweets, though, so far from President Trump. So there is a growing concern by the social media companies that their forums are being used to inflame tensions. Not all lawmakers, though, not all politicians are happy with this. One of them, Senator Mark Warner, who's going to be the incoming chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, put out a statement on Thursday saying it's simply too little, too late, that these forums have been wide open and have been willing to be used to spread the types of messages that Trump and his supporters have wanted to put out. And putting bans on him right now is simply not enough.
Former Attorney General William Barr, in a statement to the Associated Press, called the president's conduct a betrayal of his office and inexcusable. Jeff, have we heard anything from other current members of the administration?
Right. And there have been a number of things that have been coming out so far today from the administration. One of the most the strongest ones came from the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, the acting secretary, Chad Wolf, who on Thursday morning put out a statement calling the actions absolutely abhorrent, in that he called on President Trump to strongly rebuke his followers who went into the Capitol and showed the disrespect that they did and tore down the Capitol building. We've heard from the acting attorney general, who said that those who partook in the storming of the Capitol will be held to account. We've had other administration officials resign. The labor secretary, Elaine Chao, announced on Thursday that she was stepping down because of the events that took place. But for lawmakers and former officials who have long voiced concern and voiced opposition to the way the Trump administration has gone about its business. They're going on social media and saying very loudly and strongly that resigning or voicing these concerns with just 13 days until the Biden administration comes in is simply disingenuous. It's too little too late and doesn't mean very much.
VOA's national security correspondent, Jeff Selden. The president is a heavy user of social media and has long used Twitter to get his political messages out. But he's also been a critic of social media giants, saying that they were biased against conservative voices. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists working on the Japanese radio astronomy project VERA have found that Earth is 2,000 light years closer to the Milky Way's galactic center and is orbiting it about 7 kilometers per second faster than thought. Residing near the galactic center is what scientists think is a supermassive black hole called Sagittarius A star. According to the UCLA Galactic Center Group, the giant black hole has a mass 4.6 million times that of the Sun and is about 150 million kilometers in size. Project VERA scientists say not to worry, though. Their findings don't mean Earth is getting ready to be sucked into the black hole. It's just because the data they gathered over 15 years of observations allowed them to create what they call a better model of our Milky Way. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. France is considering changing its military strategy against Islamic extremists in Africa's Sahel region, including a possible partial troop pullout. The European country is facing questions over a deadly airstrike in Mali, as it paid tribute Thursday to the latest French soldiers killed there. Mali's defense ministry denied mounting claims that the airstrike killed civilians attending a wedding, insisting that only Islamist militants were hit. French troops have been present in Mali since they intervened to force Islamic extremist rebels from power in 2013. The operation was expanded to include Chad, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mauritania to improve security and stability in the broader Sahel region. There are few signs that Islamic extremist violence is waning. Last weekend, militants staged attacks on two villages in Niger near its border with Mali, killing at least 100 individuals. The World Health Organization warns the European region is probably in the most acute phase of COVID-19 transmission, and drastic measures must be taken to control the spread of the pandemic. Lisa Schlein has more.
More than 26 million cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed in the European region, including over 580,000 deaths. The World Health Organization reports levels of transmission remain extremely high. As a consequence, it notes countries and territories across the region are enacting full lockdown measures, affecting more than 230 million people. WHO Regional Director for Europe, Hans Kluge, says the year ahead offers new opportunities and tools, such as vaccines, for controlling the pandemic. At the same time, he notes, new challenges posed by the virus itself are of great concern. He says the COVID-19 virus has changed. He says it is normal for viruses that circulate to mutate over time. While little is known about the impact of the new variant, he says the new strain appears to spread more quickly and be more contagious.
22 countries in the WHO European region have detected this new variant. This variant is of concern as it has increased transmissibility. So far, we understand there is no significant change to the disease this variant produces, meaning the COVID-19 is not more nor less severe.
Kluge says the new viral strain spreads across all age groups and children do not appear to be at higher risk. Over time, he says, the variant may replace other lineages as seen in Britain and Denmark. Senior Emergency Officer in WHO's European region, Catherine Smallwood, says new variants are assessed for any public health impact. She says the strain identified in Britain has been studied for its transmissibility and impact on COVID-19 vaccines that have been developed.
There's probably quite promising evidence that the vaccine will work. And at the moment, there is no evidence for any of the variants that have emerged that there would be any decreased effectiveness of the vaccine. But studies are still ongoing, and we expect to hear more as those studies are confirmed.
The vaccine rollout will have little immediate effect on the control of transmission and spread of COVID-19. WHO officials say that will be achieved by following public health measures, such as wearing masks and social distancing. However, vaccines will protect the most vulnerable people from becoming severely ill and dying in hospital. Vaccines also hold the promise of one day bringing this devastating pandemic to an end. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And finally, as we finish this week, a look at an inspirational American icon.
My name is Dennis Mulligan. I am a park ranger here at the Statue of Liberty National Monument, one of 400 sites currently taken care of by the National Park Service. The Statue of Liberty is a gift from the people of France. At the time in 1865, the United States, we have emerged from a brutal, bloody civil war. Lincoln keeps the Union intact. The people of France are very kind of pleased that they helped create our system of government. The people of France were very supportive of the colonies and their efforts to gain independence. And at this time, the people of France, many are tired of living under the Emperor Napoleon III. And so a group of abolitionists living in France, they propose a gift of friendship that will mark the upcoming 100th anniversary of the United States' independence. And so that's the early roots of the statue's history. The statue's official name is Liberty Enlightening the World. And I love the fact that the sculptor Bartholdi gave her the name Enlightening. It makes her active, which also enables the statue's symbolism to evolve over time. Originally, she's presented as this gift of friendship, but very quickly, this image of a woman is kind of seen as an affront to many women living in the United States, because when she is inaugurated, they don't have the right to vote. And so suffragists adopt the statue as their symbol in an effort to gain the right to vote. But with the opening of Ellis Island in 1892, all of the ships arriving in the port of New York will pass this colossal statue. And for many of those immigrants, they don't view her as a symbol of friendship from the people of France. They view the statue as a welcome. For immigrants, they view the statue as a symbol of hope, a symbol of economic opportunity. And she becomes forever etched in that arriving experience. But the statue also means a lot to our military. During wartime, she isn't really viewed as a symbol of economic opportunity. She's viewed as something that soldiers, both men and women, going across the sea, bring liberty and freedom to more people. And for many of those returning servicemen and women, it is the first thing they see upon their return as those vessels return from overseas. And they view her as kind of their welcome home. By the 1870s and 1880s, nearly 60 to 70% of ships arriving for trade are arriving in the harbor here in New York. And so it's an active harbor. The artist, Bartholdi, made his first trip to the United States in 1871, and his ship actually arrived too late in the day and had to be quarantined overnight. So Bartholdi, as a young sculptor, gets to go to the upper decks and sees how active the harbor is, and he begins to sketch what he can see. And he can see this island in the distance, and the island is the home of an abandoned military fortress known as Fort Wood. And he sees the number of ships going in and out of the harbor, and he says, the island's so small, this gift that I'm proposing will look great. She'll be isolated, and all of these people will see her. The torch has been closed to the public for over 100 years now. It was closed even before the United States entered World War I. I had the opportunity very early on in my career to climb up the 42-foot ladder that's inside of her arm. And I can tell you what I remember is that it's quite dark. There are no lights in her arm. You feel like you're climbing inside of a metal drinking straw. That's exactly what it feels like. It's tight, it's enclosed, and it's quite dark. It also moves as you're climbing up her arm. Your body weight, just pulling your weight up to the next rung, causes her arm to sway. Anyone, anywhere in the world, right now, if you go to our website and you can choose up to 25 unique locations in which to learn more about the statue, and three of the stops of the 25 involve a climb up to the torch. So you might not be pulling your normal body weight up a physical ladder, but you'll be able to get to experience what I just described. You too can climb Lady Liberty's arm, at least virtually.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your desktop computer, tablet, or any other electronic device to voanews.com. And don't forget, our 24-hour, 5-minute newscast at the top of the hour will always keep you up to date and informed. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well and be safe.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Chinese Communist Party, or CCP, has imposed draconian restrictions on freedoms of expression, religion or belief, association, and the right to peaceful assembly in China. The United States, said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, has been clear that perpetrators of human rights abuses like these are not welcome in our country. Toward that end, the United States has imposed additional restrictions under the Immigration and Nationality Act on the issuance of visas for Chinese officials who are believed to be responsible for or complicit in policies or actions aimed at repressing religious and spiritual practitioners, members of ethnic minority groups, dissidents, human rights defenders, journalists, labor organizers, civil society organizers, and peaceful protesters. Family members of such persons may also be subject to these restrictions. The new restrictions are applicable to all Chinese officials engaged in repressive policies or actions against these groups, no matter their location. This year, the United States has imposed visa restrictions and financial sanctions on CCP officials responsible for carrying out the horrific abuses taking place in Xinjiang, placing restrictions on U.S. diplomats' access to Tibet, and contributing to the evisceration of Hong Kong's promised autonomy under the Sino-British Joint Declaration. These actions demonstrate the U.S. government's resolve to hold the CCP accountable for its increasing repression against the Chinese people. The United States stands with the many individuals persecuted by the CCP for trying to exercise their fundamental rights. They include lawyer Zhu Xinyang, House Church pastor Wang Yi, civil society activist Huang Qi, Uyghur academic Ilham Toti, Hong Kong democracy advocate Jimmy Lai, and Tibetan linguist and businessman Tashi Wangchuk, among many others. Secretary Pompeo called for their immediate release and urged CCP authorities to respect the human rights and fundamental freedoms to which the people of China are entitled under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.